All right. Hey, really glad to have you here. And we are in the final day of our Faith and Finance series. And today is Ask Anything. And the last one we did was 3 years ago, so we are overdue. If you've not been at Grace, this is an opportunity for you to text in questions, and you'll see the number on the screen where you can do that. And we'll take as many as we can. We realize that we just sort of do like a 30,000-foot view, and we're going to talk at the end about a class you can take for free, and you can do it online or in person, but we really want that every person at Grace would live with the measure of financial freedom. And friends, it doesn't matter how much you make. It really doesn't. It's learning how to spend in relation to what you make. And so as long as there's that gap there to say, I make this or I make this, and I spend underneath that, I have that margin where I have financial peace, and that's what we want. And so here have been our topics so far. In fact, just to drive these points home, I'd love for us to say these statements aloud together. Would you say that with me, starting with God owns it all? Let's say that all aloud. Ready? God owns it all. I'm managing his resources. The goal is not to get the life I want, but to love the life I have. And when I'm generous, I reflect the heart of our Heavenly Father. So everything that really has maybe my name on it or your name on it actually belongs to whom? Belongs to him, right? So if someone says, hey, Jonathan, can, you know, we need to borrow a minivan or something, can we borrow your... It's in my mind, I'm going, well, God, this is your minivan, and would you like me to share it in this capacity? You know, if the person's had 12 accidents in the last month, maybe it's not a good idea, but otherwise, you know, you say, what can I do to bless people? And so it all belongs to him. We manage it. Secondly, that we can learn to love the life we have. In other words, we can learn to be content. It doesn't mean you love the bad things in your life or things that need to change, but one of the things you begin to realize is you don't need a lot in order to be satisfied. One of the gifts of going to other parts of the world, especially those parts that are impoverished, that I'll just say, speak for myself, that been in parts of the world where I just look and I go, these individuals, the average income is about $1.50 a day, and there's no insurance, and if you said, well, what have you saved for retirement, they'd go, I don't know what you're talking about. And yet, for so many of them who are followers of Jesus, there's like this joy. I mean, a lot of you have experienced that, or they've been through like real heartache and just crushing grief, and they have this joy. That's what Jesus can make possible in our lives. That is not, you don't need to be making 10 times more than you've ever dreamed you can make in your life. It's not bad for that to happen, but that is not the answer, the ticket to your joy. You can learn to love the life right where you are. And then finally, just the idea of being generous, that if it all belongs to God and I get to reflect his heart, generosity is one of the ways to do that. So here's our aim over all of this is in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, it says this, that so whether you eat or drink or what are the next three words? Whatever you do, do it all for the... Okay, so here it is. Whatever you do, all for what? All for the glory of God. There's something powerful in that we say, okay, whatever I do, that means my job assignment, I can do it for the glory of God. How I take care of my body, I can do that for the glory of God. How I go on vacation, I can do that for the glory of God, and recreation, that he gives you things to enjoy. How I spend time with people, including watching a game. You know, I'm on the winning side. I'm picking Cleveland by 3 points today. But how do you treat the people around you? Maybe you don't see the world the same way you do. And all kind of, including how do you use the money that's been entrusted to you? Whatever you do, you can do for the glory of God. So here's our goal, to live every day for the glory of God, including how you work, give, spend, and save. Some of you picked up one of these cards called Growing in Grace. It has 9 little puzzle pieces on it. And they're sort of what says on the card is, here are some great core experiences that will get you growing. And what we realize is that the pathway spiritually for us is going to be different. Some of you come in and you're like, I just went through a divorce. My heart is absolutely ripped. you probably don't need to start in a financial fitness class. You need to start in divorce care, right? Or you came with emotional baggage. You had something crushing happen to you. Or maybe you go, I'm brand new to the Christian faith. I don't know what it means to follow Jesus. And you go to Alpha, which is the building blocks of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. But these nine building blocks are ways that we say, which one is sort of missing or is maybe the next step for you? One of those, the bottom right, says managing finances God's way. Find financial freedom to invest in what matters. So you'll see in your notes that you picked up on your way, and hopefully that usually I have my message notes in there. There's all kinds of resources that there are video clips, podcasts, books. I mean, so many things on the topic of finances and what does it look like to honor Jesus that we want to encourage you to check into. Also, there's a free class that starts this Wednesday. We'll talk more about in a little bit. And there's an evening seminar at the Olmsted Falls campus this Wednesday, the following Wednesday. That's mentioned in those notes as well. So check out all of those resources. Here's the goal. Here's what I want for you. I want that ultimately someday you're going to stand before Jesus, whenever that is, and you're going to hear the words that we want him to speak to us. We're in Matthew 25. Here's what it says. He says, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount. So now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together." I read that and I go, wow. Isn't that what you want him to hear him say to you? It doesn't mean you've done it perfectly, but wherever you are today, you say, God, I want to offer my life, my finances, everything to you that I'm living financially free and I'm making decisions that are honoring you, and that you'll say you've been faithful, that whether it's with a little bit or a lot, that we have been faithful. And that's what we want to talk about today. So while you're texting your questions in, you'll see again the number on the screen there that you, if you want to, send in one. We won't get to all of them, but what we want to do is take the questions we answered all three of the services here and sort of put them together in one. If you want to watch them all together, you'll be able to do that. But while you're texting in a few more questions and we get set up ready for the panel up here, I want to show one way in which your generosity is making an impact. How your generosity, in the words of Corinthians chapter 9, is not only supplying the needs of the Lord's people, but also overflowing in many expressions of thanks to God. So our denomination, the Alliance, put together a video story about our Lorraine campus, and well, I'll just let you watch. It really moved me. Here it is. Let's take a look.
Scott, you pastor a church campus with a lot of security. Can you tell me about how you get in?
Getting into my campus is really unique. Well, first of all, anyone who visits our church, they have to get approval from the state of Ohio. We have to go through something like airport security, two sets of high security fences, and then we walk about another half mile to get all the way back to our chapel. And that's what it takes to plant a church inside a prison. Prison ministry, at least in the state of Ohio, has always gone like this. A church says they want to come in and do a Bible study. So they'll come in once a month. And then another church comes in and says, we want to come in and do something every week, but it can only be on Wednesdays at 2:00. But every week it's different people. A lot of times people just give up, and these guys don't have a consistent fellowship of people who they can worship Jesus with, grow in their faith alongside.
I personally have been here since 2016. I've seen a lot of people come and go. This is a very dark place.
People need to go in and preach the gospel, not just preach the gospel, but be the active examples of what it looks like to be a man or woman of God.
These guys and the staff are truly overlooked. By design, they are kept out of sight from society. I remember the warden of the prison, she approached our church, and she said that she believes that the inmates needed more than just a program. They needed to experience transformation that God can bring people. And so she asked if we'd be willing to like truly invest in this prison community. And I started thinking like, but that means we're gonna like plant a church inside the walls of prison. That's like, I don't even know who to talk to about that. This is such an important group of people that are totally forgotten about. And in that space, there's very little hope. It can feel like they're not valued, but they are. No matter what someone has done in their life, everyone deserves the hope that Jesus can bring. What we're doing is we're in there with 17 different ministries, and it's the same people doing the same ministry every day, every week.
In the 30 years that I've been incarcerated, I've never seen the church actually plant roots in a prison and do the work that's being done here.
I'm not knocking anybody for what they do. Glory be to God for everybody that comes in. But to have the dedication to come in and set up shop, you know, that's bold.
They see you here time and time again. They know that it's for real.
Grace has been here for about 2 years now. They've been faithful, they've been consistent. They always come in with a smile on their face, willing to help share your burdens.
You know that they're genuine, like they really pray for us. When they say that, like you can tell they mean it.
This is Paul, he's a Grace volunteer. I've been incarcerated for quite a few years. You know, when you come to prison as a child, there's a lot of things you miss. Not really understanding what manhood is. And Paul gave that to me.
Pastor Jonathan, the head pastor at the church, he really does make us feel like we're a part of the home church. He always shouts us out on the screen.
Brothers at Lorraine Correctional, we love you, so grateful for you. We are so glad to have you as part of the family, and love you guys.
There's an entire family of believers who are waiting for the guys on the outside once they're released so they can continue growing with Jesus.
Some of us do get transformed. What transformation is, I'm not talking about religion, I'm talking about relationship.
We have 7 long-term inmates going through the School of Ministry, and our hope is that they will be part of planting more churches in other prisons or on the outside as well.
I can help people, like for real. I wanna go out there and I wanna come back in and I wanna show these dudes what it looked like. Because when God changes your heart, it changes everything.
It is hard. Sometimes I just want to quit. But I keep going because there's a lot of lost people there. There's a lot of people that need the hope that truly only comes from Jesus. But there's also a lot of people there who know Jesus and they're lonely. And they need equipped. They need to be encouraged. They need people to walk alongside them.
Isn't that great? I love it. You might be wondering if you can get involved in some way. No, you can't. No, you could, actually. We would be glad to. We probably have 70 people who have been approved as volunteers. You got to go through a bit of a training, but it's just a really neat way. And so we do Alpha out there. We do job training. There's recovery. There's, you know, Word Up Wednesday. They have a worship service every week. Just lots happening. And some of those guys have become part of our church family here as well. And so really, really grateful for what God is doing. All right, well, this is our Ask Anything. Here's what we do. Questions have been texted in. Those go to a spreadsheet that populates for us. We'll get to as many as we can. And again, we're going to try to answer briefly and then point you to a class that I'll put on the screen here in a little bit. That begins this Wednesday. But let me introduce you to my two esteemed fellow panelists here. Dr. Katie Che. Katie's is a physical therapist at the Cleveland Clinic. She's a happy mom of 2 and a wife of 1. And she and Justin have been leading here at Grace in some really neat ways. And just really grateful, Katie, for you. And then Pastor Greg Carrick. Greg is the longest serving staff member at our church family since 1990, 34 years. So, and he might be physically in the best shape of all of us. Greg's a hiker extraordinaire. If you want to know about national parks, ask Greg. But also has taught a lot of financial classes here. And the reason these two are up here, they're just two of many who have said, Jesus, we want to be fully devoted to you. We want every area of life to be surrendered to your leadership. And we want your word to direct our steps. And so that's our heart here. We're going to just point in the direction of what does God want in various areas. So let's just dive right in here. And Katie, I'll start with you. One that came in here, it's number 16, I'm just gonna pick this one out, is buying a lottery ticket a sinful action? Just dive, let's get really, right into the...
It's a good question. I think we can think about other kinds of, is this gambling, other kinds of gambling, including sports betting or things like that. To think about 1 Timothy 6:10, which says, the love of money is the root of all evil, or Proverbs 13:11, wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. So while buying one lottery ticket may not be a sin, like, we want to think about the bigger picture. Why are we doing this? What is the motivation of our heart? And also think about the potential for addiction and how addiction to any sort of, whether it's a substance or an action or a process, can really damage our lives and our relationships. And so think about each action we take, including buying lottery tickets, within those lights.
That's really good. Bob and Linda Loddick, the class that we're offering this Wednesday, True Financial Freedom, he mentions in that class that there's the average American spends $1,000 a year on lottery tickets. So let's just say roughly like 20 bucks a week. You know, not a lot, but he said if the same person invested that money like in a mutual fund, $20 a week, that over the course of 40 plus years, you'd have over $1 million. Mm. So we're always like, I'll do the lottery ticket, maybe I'll get $1 million. You invest that money instead, is it wrong? Is it a sin? Maybe it's not a sin, but as you said, be careful of addiction. I love that verse you brought in, that wealth gained hastily will dwindle, Proverbs 13:11, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. It's great. Greg, a number of questions have come in about tithing. You can pick anyone you want, but I'll just mention the first one here. It says, hello, my question about tithing. So much of our tax dollars, both state and federal, go to welfare programs, and generally speaking, help folks who need a hand up. This includes assistance for housing, food, utilities, college loan forgiveness, starting a business, et cetera. Should this count toward our 10% tithing guidelines? Thank you. In other words, I guess, do my taxes count for my tithe? Never thought of that.
I'll probably tie that in with another question that came in. Should I tithe off of my gross or net income? So we'll maybe tackle both of those. Yeah, I think I like that verse in Matthew where it says, give to Caesar what Caesar's and to God what is God. And I think I would see those differently. I think the government often spends money in ways that you and I would go, I don't like how they're spending that money. And so we want to give to causes that really advance God's kingdoms. And so I think I'd separate those in my mind. And we want to just stretch our faith and trust God that he'll provide that money for a tithe. I laugh about the, should I grow tithe off my gross or net income? Because when I was a young guy, just came to the Lord in my early 20s and came out of a non-Christian home, and somebody suggested this concept of giving 10%. And I go like, you want 10%? So I says, well, I'll give them my net. But and, you know, God just stretched me. He says, man, given it'll be given to you. Pressed down, shaken together, spilling over into your laps. And Malachi, he really challenges us. He says, test me in this. See if I won't open the floodgates of heaven. And so my wife and I have found over the years, you can't outgive God. You know, we stretch and we give, and then all of a sudden, you know, God knows how to make up that step of faith that we took. And that's not the reason we give, is to get more. But we give, and God's just a giving kind of God, and he knows how to replenish what we give.
Sometimes people will respond and they'll say, well, I'm not giving anything right now and I'm in debt, whatever. I think if just say, what if I gave 1% this year and increase that to 2% this coming year? 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 13, Paul is talking about giving and generosity, and he says this. He says, our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard-pressed, but that there might be equality. At this present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn, their plenty will supply what you need. Mm-hmm. And so the goal, I think, is to say, if you're in a place where you went through a crisis and you know, you're in a divorce and you just go, God is not, you know, looking to punish you or hold, you know, this. He's gracious. And I think when you get to a place of saying, okay, I'm able to be able to give more now and I can bless others, I'll do that.
Ultimately, it's really a faith issue, isn't it? It's like, who am I going to trust in my wisdom and resources, or am I going to really trust God? So tithing is not because God needs our money. It's to stretch our soul and say, Lord, I really know that you're the provider of all things, and I'm going to rest there.
It's good.
Yeah, and our money is one way that we can be generous. Mm. We can also be generous with our time. We can give someone a ride. We can lead a group or, you know, volunteer to cook food for someone. Like, yes, we should obey God with our money and be generous, but it's not the only way.
That's great. All right, Katie, here's one for you. It says, this is number 13 that came in. My husband and I both work, but he makes double to triple what I make. I am the one who keeps track of the budget, the bills, our finances in general. He doesn't have anything to do with it, nor does he want to. I'm the organized one who takes care of all of that. We still make decisions together, and he gets the final say in expenses. But biblically, should the man be in charge of this? What does the Bible say a woman's role is when it comes to the finances in a marriage? What would you say?
Well, I'm the one in our marriage who does the finances, so I would say it's okay. But I think if we look at what God says, there's plenty of things that he gives us clear direction on, and I'm not familiar of a verse that says being male qualifies you exclusively to handle money. Rather, God gives us direction to work within our gifts. Romans 12, 6 through 8 highlights, you know, if your gift is prophesying, then prophesy. God wants us to work in our areas of strength and experience, so I think we can divide labor within relationships based on interest, skill, and gifting.
Good. Totally agree with you. Yeah. All right, Greg, number 18. How can we respond in a Christ-like manner, generously but wisely, in a time of inflation and prices that are having a direct impact on our budget? I guess what they're saying is, you know, considering inflation and the challenge that does for us, what does it look like to follow Jesus well in that time?
Yeah, it's really been a challenging couple of years here, as an inflation-wise. I've seen this a couple times over the decades, and it really stretches us. I think we have to go back to, you know, figuring out the budget. You know, we got to sort of prioritize what's critically important. Well, I need a place to live. I need food. I need some clothing. I need a car to get to work. And we sort of prioritize those major things that are necessities and then adjust the other areas. Sometimes if we slow down enough to do a budget and sort of figure out where our dollars are going, you go, I don't really need that, or I could do away with that. That's not a critical thing. So sometimes it's really tough choices too. It's like going after some of the major things. Maybe I got too big a house, or I bought too fancy a car, and we need to downsize a little bit. Sometimes when things get tough inflation-wise, we got to make some tough choices. But that's the beauty of getting into these personal finance classes that we offer. It really helps you step back and look at the big picture and do some effective planning. Probably the verse I think about is the one, if you're going to build a tower, in Luke 14, it says, don't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to build it. A lot of times we don't like budgeting. You know, it's just, that's a lot of work, and I'm not sort of a math kind of person. But no, you need to do that. You need to plan. You wouldn't build a house without coming up with blueprints, and you probably shouldn't go through your next year without having a budget and telling your dollars where they should go, because if you don't do that, it'll go to places that sort of leak out, and as you step back, it says, that really wasn't an important purchase for me, and I shouldn't have spent that much money on that, and that helps avoid that.
That's good.
I think also, as Bob Loddick talked about in the book that we have here, that it's okay to try and earn more money, too, and that doesn't have to mean getting another job. There's many ways to see, can I earn more at my current job? Can I do a side job, sell something that I have? Like, there's a lot of creative ways to increase your income
It's good. Mm-hmm. Increase our income and maybe reduce our spending where it feels like we're earning more. Mm-hmm. I'm going to answer number 21. You guys, why don't you each pick one and while I'm responding to this one. This one comes in. What do you recommend when family wants to borrow money? That never happens, right? My elderly uncle borrowed over $8,000 from me, and I haven't seen 10 cents of it back. I feel so exploited and had to cut off communication with him because he kept asking for more. I love my uncle, but the manipulation and financial abuse was more than I could handle. I want to be able to help family or friends, but what do you suggest is true help and financial hardship of family? It's a great question. I mean, there's a generosity to say I loaned $8,000. Presumably, it was like, I'm not even going to demand that back, but they keep on asking for more. Let me just mention it. And on your notes, the paper notes, if you want to write down a couple verses, you could. But Proverbs 6, verses 1 to 15, there's a verse in there that says, if you consign a loan for an acquaintance and guarantee the debt, you'll be sorry you ever did it. You'll be trapped by your promise and legally bound by the agreement. Now, that would be like if you co-sign on a house, a car, whatever, person, you know, drops the ball and you're like, I'm on the hook for this. And so there's warnings. Proverbs 22, 26, and 27 has as well. Just be careful about putting up security. I think what some of us would say is if you've loaned money, especially to a family member, you might almost consider it like, I'm giving this with the knowledge that I may not see it again. Maybe they owe it back to me, but I would encourage you, don't let money be a wedge in your relationship that ruins your relationship. Romans 12 says, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. As a guy who's done a lot of funerals, it's amazing how money, when somebody dies, how money has become a very painful, dividing family. It just cuts families. And some of you would go like, oh man, does it ever? It's happened to me. Where, you know, someone runs off with the money, they've manipulated the will, they've done something else, or they've taken a material possession. Don't let relationships matter, or don't let money matter to you more than relationships. Is it wise to say, I've loaned money, they've not proven trustworthy? Jesus himself says that. He says, if you're faithful to little, I'll give you more. If you're unfaithful with a little, I'm not going to give you more. So you'd be fine not to give more money to your uncle on the basis of what Jesus says as well. Questions you guys see there you want to answer?
I can do number 24 here. The question came in, I'm 26 years old, and I've heard for years about investing in compound interest and save. How do I actually do that? Do I go to my bank and open a savings account? Well, first of all, if you're 26 years old and asking this question, I love you. This is the time to ask those questions, man. Oh, the 26-year-old me, if I could talk to my present self, some different decisions. So to do a shameless plug, I do this class about once a year called Investing here at Grace Church, sort of a biblical view of investing and teaching people about investments. It's not something you learn in high school or, you know.
How much do you charge for that class,
We charge nothing for that class.
Good, that's what
it's free. And so class will really teach you about all the dynamics of doing that. But, you know, probably a quick answer to your question is you want to find a big investment firm like a Vanguard, a Fidelity, Charles Schwab or something, and they have a lot of options, either retirement plans or non-retirement plans. And we in the class do a deep dive into all the details about that. But great question. Start early. Take advantage of those compounding interests over the years, and you're going to set yourself up very nicely and have a lot of money to bless other people down the road. So rather than being in need, you're going to have plenty to help others when things get tough. So that's my advice.
That's great. Great. Katie, how about you?
Okay, so I'm going to go for number 31. We're in credit card debt. We have only one family job since we need someone to be home with the kids. How do you get out of credit card debt with limited funds? And I think that could be a really challenging situation when the income doesn't seem to stretch as far as all of the debts. And this is where you might benefit from one of the financial classes that we have here at Grace or meeting with one of the volunteer financial counselors. The nuts and bolts of it, you want to start with the highest interest first so that your money goes as far as it can. Really look and see, are there opportunities to reduce that interest rate? And then, as we talked about before, look at your budget and see where can we cut things as much as we can to put that extra money towards the debt, because that interest rate really does work against you with credit cards.
That's great. Thank you. I'm going to answer one, because a lot of questions are coming on giving. I'm just going to respond and tell what Mary and I do, and if you guys want to look at some more, because a lot have been coming in. So this one says, why do we generally tithe 10%, which is what tithe means, when the New Testament doesn't specify an amount, and the Old Testament believers gave over 20% between different laws given to them, which is true. Some have said it's like 22%, which sort of included taxes. They were a theocracy, so you were giving for the nation as well as to God. And so it's different then. But what about today? I would agree that I think the New Testament gives a lot of freedom. Jesus makes one comment where he talks about caring for your family and also giving. And the Pharisees were giving to the local temple, and they were ignoring the needs of their family. And Jesus says, you should do the former without neglecting the latter. In other words, you should care for your family, but not neglect giving to the temple as well. And that was probably, and Jesus talked about storing up treasure in heaven. So what do we do? I'll just say for Mary and me, we've started with a 10% to our church family. And you could say, well, if the New Testament doesn't teach, I would just say, I've been blessed as a guy living in America. If you live in America, you're, even if you feel like you're really struggling financially, you're probably in the top 10% of the people who have the most resources in the world, if you looked at the world as a whole. And so Mary and I have said, we're going to live simply enough that we can give at least 10%. We start by doing that to our local church, to Grace, just to make youth retreats happen and kids ministry and facility and all of that kind. And then we give to global outreach. We do that as well. We give to an organization that helps to protect kids at risk for sex trafficking. We support some individuals, in addition to that 10%, who are working on college campuses. So find your place that you can say, here's what we can do, and give in that way. And I, for us, you start where you're being spiritually nurtured, and then you go beyond there. But is there a New Testament law? I would just say what Jesus says is be generous and store up treasure in heaven. So there's partly almost a sense of, I can give in a way that I'm storing up treasure that someone said, you can't take it with you. You'll never see a hearse pulling a U-Haul, but you can send it on ahead, right? And so when I give, in some amazing sense, Jesus is saying, you are sending treasure on ahead, that he says, you'll have treasure in heaven that will, where thief cannot steal and moths cannot, you know, come in and mess up. You're gonna have that treasure forever. And so don't let giving be something that feels like an obligation. At some point it says, God loves what kind of a giver? Like a cheerful giver. He wants me to give. If my kids were like, Dad, are you gonna give us like, you know, this, and Mom, are you gonna help us out? And I'm like, well, you know, I guess I have to, like, you're under my roof. There's a sense when my kids ask me, I love to be generous with my kids. You're right, Mary does. And there's some, when you love someone, you long to be generous. When you love God, you love people, you wanna have a heart like his. So, all right, another question for each of you. Whoever wants to go next.
I have number 19 here. It's the question is, we have remaining student loans, and with the current legislation, we are in forbearance. What is a Christ-like way to deal with this? Should we pay them back even though we're under PSLF and may have them forgiven? Great question, you know, and it's tough to this on again, off again with whether student loans are gonna be forgiven. And you know, I'm not opposed myself to if government wants to, you know, give me some help or whatever to accept that. But I think on our side as Christians, we have to, you know, keep our promises in our word. When you signed a promissory note for a student loan or whatever loan, you're promising that you're going to pay it back, and you're sort of staking your name on that. And so I think I would plan like you're going to have to pay it back. So I would certainly make minimum payments on that and not cross your fingers and hope the government will forgive that. And then if they do forgive a portion or all of it at some time, you know, you're great, you know, or maybe if you would be paying extra on that student loan beyond the minimum, maybe you put it in your own bank account and, you know, you have that money to pay it off. But if they don't pay it off, the interest is, you know, keeps growing and growing and growing. So I'm a fan of just, you got to keep your promises, pay those off. You certainly want to avoid the interest payments, so better than later, but if God provides, then you're in great shape. Anything you'd add to that? Or
that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so a few questions came in. What does giving look like as a teenager? How can I, as a teen, stay faithful through finance if I struggle with saving? So I thought I should pick this because I'm the closest to a teenager on the panel.
What are you saying about Greg and me?
It's great. It's great, yeah.
But I do think that God tells us in Matthew 25 with the parable of the talents, and he gives each of these servants some resources to take care of and to invest. And God says that, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. So even for those of us who are young, this is a great opportunity to practice saving, even if it's a dollar. It's a good practice to be generous and to find that balance between greed and stinginess and just spending everything you get. So when we have a little bit, it's a great opportunity to practice for when we'll have more under our responsibility.
It's a great response, Kate. And I think when we start patterns early on in life, in whatever area, like it could be reading your Bible or exercise or whatever, but including how we manage our money. So Mary and I gave our son, our last one, I'll just speak about the most recent, but a few years ago during COVID, he was in high school, and I told him, you know, you've got extra time right now. I'll pay you $10 for every video session you watch at Financial Peace University or any other financial, you know, Christian financial thing online. And he was like, I don't know what to do. I said, all right, it's up to you. 45 minutes or 10 bucks. I think that's not a bad deal, you know? And well, he started doing it, and halfway through the course, he goes, Dad, where do people learn this stuff? If they don't, like, we don't learn this in school. Like, where do you? And he said, everyone needs to watch this. He had never heard of compounding interest. And as a 17-year-old, he was very pumped about that. And we helped him set up a little mutual fund with some graduation money he got. And so, yeah, start young. Which ties into one, I'll just say number 96 here. I'll go to person writes, I'm very concerned about having enough money to retire when I'm able. I currently have 100% in low index funds to grow it. However, I just turned 40 and I'm wondering if there are other things I need to consider investing in, or are any tips, classes offered to guide me in the right direction. I'll just say, if you're 40 and you're already investing like that, way to go. Let me turn you to one of the Proverbs. Proverbs 13:11 says, dishonest money dwindles away. In other words, if you are earning money in a way that's dishonest, you're going to face discipline for that. But it says, whoever gathers money little by little makes it grow. Talks about consider the ant as well. But when you gather money little by little, you've probably heard of retirement calculators. Just Google that, and you'll go online. You'll see, and you'll say, when do you expect to retire? I always find the most challenging one is, how long do you expect to live? I have no idea. But you put 95 years old and put in the calculator, and it'll tell you, like, what are you saving right now? If you continue on that trajectory, you know, and you might realize, like, wow, I'm gonna be in great shape. And if you're not, let me mention a class. You mentioned, the person asked the question, what should I do? If you guys want to put up the slider for the class we're going to be starting this Wednesday, it's called True Financial Freedom. And if you don't want to go to the class this Wednesday night, there it is right there. If it doesn't work out, sorry about that, right over Katie's face. But you can go to that class for free, or you'll see in your bulletin, you can do it online for free because Grace got a subscription. I've gone through it. They have an accompanying book that's out at the lobby. Excellent book. But that's going to get into the nitty-gritty of, I'm $73,000 in debt. I have no way out. I don't know what to do. Go to the class, and they're going to step-by-step give you hope. And they talk about their own challenges, and you won't be shamed. Just want to encourage you to either get the book, do the class. You won't regret it. Great questions that came through here. Greg and Katie, thank you so much. Greg, I'm going to ask if you'd be willing to close us in prayer.
Sure.
And just ask the Lord to guide us in this journey.
Well, Lord, we are part of a forever family, and we want the long view of things as we consider finances. We don't want to store up our treasures in this world, but Lord, we want to invest wisely in your kingdom. So give us wisdom as we think through this. May we be wise stewards of all these resources that we have. We're truly a well-provided for nation and a very rich people. And we want to be generous, Lord, and caring for the needs of others. And Lord, thank you how you take care of your kids. We just give ourselves afresh to you. Would you grow our faith and our confidence in you? And I know it'll show up in our finances.